Subheading. And in the time of the end, a pushing. The time of the end begins the climacteric phase of the long-running rivalry between the King of the North and King of the South, which ultimately leads to Michael, the Archangel, standing up to annihilate the last king. Although the King of the South is destined to initiate the pushing against his imperial nemesis, it is the King of the North who responds with overwhelming force. The angel relates the details of the conclusive clash. And in the time of the end, the King of the South will engage with him in a pushing, and against him the King of the North will storm with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he will certainly enter into the lands and flood over and pass through. He will also actually enter into the land of the decoration, and there will be many lands that will be made to stumble. But these are the ones that will escape out of his hand, Edom and Moab, and the main part of the sons of Ammon. And he will keep thrusting out his hand against the lands, and as regards the land of Egypt, she will not prove to be an escapee. And he will actually rule over the hidden treasures of the gold and the silver, over all the desirable things of Egypt. And the Libyans and the Ethiopians will be at his steps. Having presented the historical dimensions of the ongoing confrontation between two inimical systems that have become fused together into what is now the Anglo-American dual world power, it is time to consider what is to occur in the time of the end. It is noteworthy that the English phrase, the time of the end, appears in the Greek Septuagint version of Daniel as the word centelia. However, in the actual Greek scriptures, centelia is translated into English as the conclusion of a system of things. This indicates that the phrases, the time of the end, and conclusion of a system are synonymous. It may rightly be concluded, then, that the harvest is accomplished concurrent with the concluding phase of the rivalry between the two kings. It would appear that the variously described whirlwind and storm-like invasion of the King of the North is the tempest of Jehovah. Though initiated by the pushing of the King of the South, the most significant feature of the end times conflict between the two kings is that the King of the North ultimately overwhelms and subjugates his rival. It would appear that his domination will be total, global. That is why it is a single king, the King of the North, who comes all the way to his end with no helper for him to be found. That crucial fact has so far been lost upon the Sibyls of Bethel. Yet the prophecy is in harmony with the totality of God's prophetic word, which reveals a solitary king will appear on the scene during the final period. Noteworthy, too, both the New World Translation and the King James Version use the term pushing. A push or shove between two belligerents is not intended as an all-out knockout blow. What may be involved in the pushing between the two kings during the time of the end? The expression, the time of the end, may well be an appropriate way to describe the world at this present moment, from the standpoint that a system is ending. No, not the entire wicked system, not yet anyway, but certainly it is no exaggeration to say that the global financial system has recently entered into what some might describe as a terminal phase. The Wall Street financial arrangement, which is really just an extension of London's empire of financiers, is predatory by design. Particularly is that the case with the exotic new financial schemes of more recent years. As has been demonstrated, the financiers have the power to loot and plunder the world on a massive scale and bring the nations to their knees. The only entities powerful enough to prevent it are the national governments. But lawmakers and watchdogs have been seduced and corrupted by the cunning money powers. To illustrate the point, in the past decade, laws and regulatory systems that were intended to dampen rampant speculation have been weakened. For example, during the Great Depression, Roosevelt signed into law the so-called Glass-Steagall Act, which outlawed commercial and investment banking under the same roof. The intent of the law was to protect bank depositors and investors from losses incurred by speculative bankers. However, Glass-Steagall was repealed in 1999 due to the illegal merger of Travelers Insurance and Citibank. Many observers now point to the repeal of Glass-Steagall as one of the major reasons for the ongoing financial meltdown, which to date has seen the evaporation of over $50 trillion from equities values worldwide, largely due to the derivatives losses of the giant banking houses and their subsidiary hedge funds. As another example of the paralysis of governmental agencies, in recent months, two well-respected Wall Street men have been exposed as operating massive Ponzi schemes that were also used as drug money laundering conduits, and which ultimately bilked tens of billions from trusting individuals and institutions. In both cases, regulators at the SEC were aware of suspicious activities but did nothing to protect investors. Now, though, a new American administration is attempting to reverse years of deregulation and even making tentative moves to crack down on the empire's flourishing dope business. And not only that, but as reported by the British press recently, London is horrified that the Obama administration may not continue the Anglo-American special relationship. This startling development gives rise to the question, has the prophesied pushing begun? Time will tell. All this comes at a time when world leaders are faced with setting up a new global financial and monetary structure to replace the failed present system. That such discussions are now taking place, in a recent speech before gathered Asian financial ministers, the former head of the IMF, Michael Kamdasis, called upon Asia to become the new money center of what Kamdasis called a new world order. There are also serious discussions to replace the dollar as the world's reserve currency with a currency issued by the United Nations. The question that remains unanswered is, who will control the new financial system? Will individual nations be allowed to reassert their sovereignty over their currencies and domestic economies? Or will private financial interests continue to dominate? Those are the crucial questions with which the world is now faced, and the urgency of the crisis requires immediate solutions. One thing seems fairly certain. Any move by the American government to extract itself from the hunter net and push the financiers into the background will be met with a storm of ferocity. The empire now stands poised to unleash a wave of assassinations, terrorism, perhaps using biological agents, anarchy, and world war in order to destroy the nation-state system for good. And although London and the British Empire may have played the role of the King of the North for the past two centuries, that is about to change too. In the aftermath of the coming crash of the present Anglo-American system, the last manifestation of the King of the North will likely be in the form of the United Nations, not as it presently exists, but as a totalitarian, supranational government, the New World Order. The significance of Egypt not escaping the King of the North is discussed in the next chapter. Other aspects of the prophecy are considered in chapter 24, Daniel